That shaking martini signals it's time for another episode of the Gamer Mafia Podcast. Well, hello and welcome to kind of an emergency session of the Gamer Mafia Podcast. This is Tom, your host.
This is John, your co-host.
And I gotta tell you, I'm really angry and I'm really hurt and I'm really disappointed in this incident that came to my attention yesterday. John sent me this IM from, is she a lesbian blogger?
So here's the thing, is that I read a bunch of, I read a lot of websites during the day. I read everything from CNN to Drudge Report to Think Progress, which is Center for American Progress's website. Mm-hmm. And I read several gay news blogs as well. And one of them is called Pam's Home Blend by Pam Spalding, who is a blogger. She's a lesbian. She's very politically active. And there's a lot of like great, you know, gay-centered news. And so I was hit there one day, yesterday, and I see the headline, Orson Scott Card wants to destroy the government because of gay marriage.
Yeah.
Now, for the geek component of our audience, you know who Orson Scott Card is. But for maybe for the other component, let me explain. Orson Scott Card is a very prolific author who's written a lot of science fiction and fantasy. He's most famous for the Ender's Game trilogy.
Yes.
Which is the books Ender's Game, Speaker for the Dead, and Xenocide, which is all about aliens who have invaded the Earth and kids who are trained in order to fight against the aliens, and right. then the ramifications thereof as they get older and all that. And on a side note, this is actually these three books. This was the first gift Tom gave me as for Christmas,
right?
And he was a big fan of them.
To take it even further back from me too, and my connection, sort of my little homosexual world and connection with Orson Scott Card, is the very first person I ever had sex with, which was in Kansas City during this college speech tournament, this, like, national speech tournament. You know, this was, like, the first time I ever actually, you know, bedded with some other man. He turned me on to Orson Scott Card. He's the one who first gave me Ender's Game, told me to read it, that it's, like, the best thing he's ever read, that Orson Scott Card is this great author, you know, and just... So his work has this very intimate and special place for me,
right?
In sort of just my whole, you know, life as a homosexual man, and also as just a fan of science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important to me, and I feel like, you know, he's just Donna Summered us, you know, in a big way,
right?
I mean, not to be flippant, but. You know, what she's had to apologize for the last 30 years for what she said.
And has. And you know. She said she was taken out of context, and then she said it was never attributed to her.
Right.
Here's the thing. With Orson Scott Card, he's a Mormon. And I think, according to his Wikipedia page, his dad or his... He's a distant relative of Brigham Young, who, like, formed Brigham Young University. So his Mormonism runs very, very strong. And I knew this, actually, when we actually met Orson Scott Card at a
right.
book signing.
In Chicago. Xenocide came out. Yeah,
right.
We met him.
And we signed some books, and I actually asked him, because the only other exposure to him, the only other exposure to Mormonism I've ever been exposed to was in Angels in America. And I was just curious just to get his opinion. And I wasn't interested in sparking any kind of debate or discussion at all, because I loved his books.
Right.
And he said, I know enough about him not to read them.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, well, he also added, because I've read enough anti-Mormon crap that I don't want to be bothered with it.
Oh, I don't remember. I don't remember that.
That's why I've been joking all these years, that he, like, snapped at you.
Right.
And that you pissed Orson Scott Card off.
Right, exactly. I was just curious. I was the naive little Midwestern kid.
But clearly the Mormon, you know, scar, what have you, the scab is you know, quite sensitive on this man. And
it's
now on full display thanks to this rant of his.
So to get back to Pam Spalding, Pam had, she has a bunch of different people who blog with her on the site, and someone had posted the link to an op-ed that Orson Scott Card had written for the Mormon Times, all about
gay marriage. Brave of him too to have that published in
the Mormon Times.
Yeah, in the Mormon Times.
The name of the article, the op-ed is called "State Job Is Not to Redefine Marriage." It was published Thursday, July 24th, 2008.
Mm-hmm.
So, basically, it's if you print it out, it's a six-page article.
Mm-hmm. Diatribe, manifesto.
All talking about how wrong gay marriage is, how offensive gay marriage is, and he actually breaks down what male and female roles in marriage should be.
Oh, yes.
And how wives should...
That old chestnut.
Wives should be loyal to their husbands, mm-hmm, and take care of the kids, while the man is responsible for being the breadwinner.
Well, he also goes against some core beliefs of his own religion, in that he says laws should be enacted, and it should be set forth that once a man and a woman are married, that it is understood that they will not allow any other man or woman to come into their life. Which, based on, original, let's bring it back to Brigham Young, right, based on original Mormon core beliefs, they were all polygamists. Yeah. So he's going against his own religion.
Right.
He's going against his own core values.
Exactly.
If he's going to be stating these kinds of things. But, yeah. Oh, I just want to let you all know that this is going to be like a 3 or 4-parter, I think, because we are going to systematically go through this article line by line.
Right.
And I want to deconstruct and, you know, rebut, right, and refute pretty much everything that this man is saying.
Right. Well, let's start backwards.
Okay. Yeah, because this is really the
two. Okay, this is what gets me going the most, and I've already posted this on my own blog, so this is the thing that really set me over the edge. These are the final two paragraphs of his op-ed.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, "How long before married people answered the dictators thus? Regardless of law, marriage has only one definition, and any government that attempts to change it is my mortal enemy. I will act to destroy that government and bring it down so it will be replaced with a government that will respect and support marriage and will help me raise my children in a society where they will expect to marry in their turn. Biological imperatives trump laws. American government cannot fight against marriage and hope to endure. If the Constitution is defined in such a way as to destroy the privileged position of marriage, it is that insane Constitution, not marriage, that will die." End quote.
I swear to God, I could probably go for like 2 hours just on those few lines.
Oh, I know.
I mean, let's... let's just start here at the first line. I mean, how long before married people answer the dictators thus? Regardless of law, marriage has only one definition, and any government that attempts to change it is my mortal enemy. Which government?
Right. Well, like, which government? What are we talking? Federal? Are we talking state? Are we talking local? Are we, you know?
And state by state, marriage laws are different. Some have waiting periods. Some, you know, you can get it overnight. Some you can just go in and get a marriage license, you know.
Some involve residency, mm-hmm, requirements. Some don't. Like, for example, Massachusetts, I believe, does not. California does not. So, which is one of the reasons why when the same-sex marriage case in California was before the Supreme Court here in the state, like 14 other states were siding with making sure that this didn't happen because they didn't want their own courts to go through the same thing that California did.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, and here's the thing. Here's the thing that absolutely gets me. Okay, he says basically that if the Constitution allows it, then the Constitution is insane. Which, this goes back to the fundamental argument of gays and lesbians just want what everybody else has.
That's right. We don't want any new laws.
We don't want anything.
Anything new. It's just the same as everything else. Still to this day, the majority of states do not have on their basic non-discrimination clause, mm-hmm, a gay and lesbian line. It's like everything right. else, but if you're gay and lesbian, then you can be kicked out of your apartment or your home, or
you can be fired from your job
and have absolutely no legal recourse,
right?
Just for because you're a homosexual.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's
right, and he basically says that marriage is a privileged state. Mm-hmm. So okay, if marriage, all right, okay, hold on, let me go back. All gays and lesbians want is what heterosexuals have through the law here. Mm-hmm. Marriage, as currently defined, you know, is one of those few licenses that sticks throughout all the 50 states and abroad. So, because the founders realized that if you had to remarry in each state, if you had to move or whatever, that would be bad. That would be cumbersome and taxing. So it was just, it's there in the law saying that if you're married in one state, you're married in all 50, and it's applicable.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that for if you're an attorney. You can't do that if you're a doctor. You can't do that. You can't get a fishing license in one state and expect it to stay in another. You know it, but with a marriage license, you can. When the Defense of Marriage Act was passed in 1996, it basically said that it denuded that. It basically said no. If one state has same-sex marriage, another state can choose not to recognize it.
Exactly.
Which instantly puts same-sex marriage as a lesser institution.
Mm-hmm.
It instantly says, okay, well, you're not good enough. It basically says that, okay, so for Tom and I, you know, after we do eventually get married here in California, and if we travel to, like, Nevada, if we decide to go to Vegas for the weekend, and we would have to get additional legal protections then,
mm-hmm.
just in case, if God forbid, if some idiot is drunk driving and slams a car into us, and Tom is in intensive care, therefore I would be legally barred from seeing him because Nevada does not recognize same-sex marriages.
Right.
So therefore I would have to say, but I have power of attorney, so therefore yes. I can go see him.
But that very same state, what do they have?
They have legalized prostitution.
Oh, well, that.
And legalized gambling.
Well, that, but also, you can go there overnight, get blitzed out of your mind, and go to some 24-hour chapel,
right?
Sign on the dotted line, and get married. That's, you right. know...
Exactly.
Right.
So people say, like, oh, we have to protect the institution of marriage. Yeah. It's this privileged institution.
Mm-hmm.
If it's so privileged, why is it can I go through a drive-thru and get it the same way I can get a Big Mac
yeah.
and fries?
Yeah, shouldn't that be banned? Shouldn't that be made illegal?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's one. Why is it that you need a 7-day waiting period to get a gun, but in a lot of states you can just get married right there on the spot,
right?
Or you know, all you do is it takes like a day or two to get your license, to get your blood tested if you need to, and then go ahead and boom, you have a justice of the peace do it, and you know, then you're married,
right? I mean, on that same token too, yeah. Shouldn't if it is such as privileged state, shouldn't then divorces also be extraordinarily difficult?
They should.
I mean, shouldn't shouldn't there be some sort of department? Here, he says it right here. He says, a government that will respect and support marriage and help me raise my children in a society where they expect to marry in their turn. That, to me, spells a federal department that needs to be set up. Yeah, a federal department of marriage.
That sounds like big government liberal talk to me.
Well, I know. Isn't that crazy? But that's sort of the logical end of all of this argument. This is where this is all going. Then that's what needs to happen. I mean, there needs to be some department set up that's going to say, well, if you want to get a divorce, we're going to have to send in our government officials, mm-hmm. some sort of counselors who are going to help you go through it,
right?
You know, and you know, help you work through all of your problems to maintain this institution and to maintain this relationship. I mean, that's the logical end. I mean,
right.
making divorce extraordinarily difficult,
right.
And also making getting married in itself extraordinarily difficult.
It should be. Yeah.
I mean, like you said, there's waiting periods for all of this other stuff. However, you can get married overnight. And you know, there's no stipulation on what it takes to get a marriage license, except it's two people who want to get married and an age thing and sometimes residency and all this. But
right.
I mean, on the grand scheme of things, it's really easy to get married. And
well, yeah, because the government wants to encourage marriage. They want to, because the thing is, like, when you fill out your taxes, the deductions you're supposed to take
mm-hmm.
are for yourself, your spouse, and then your children.
But if it is,
so therefore the government right. is through taxation, they are encouraging you
mm-hmm.
to have kids by saying we will tax you less
right.
if you are married and you have children.
Mm-hmm. But if it is such this privileged state,
right?
I mean, shouldn't there be all of these stipulations,
right,
before you can get married? Like, say, you know, financial,
mm-hmm. psychological, medical,
exactly. All of these things. I think a whole battery of examinations and interview processes,
right.
You know, you have to own a home kind of a thing, you know, all of these stipulations on allowing somebody, you know, on allowing two people to get married.
Right.
If it is truly this privileged
state, right.
It needs to be regulated,
right.
You know, in that way. Otherwise it's solely meaningless, and this whole idea of privilege is just a word that he's throwing out to, you know, prop up his own bigotry.
Right. Well, yeah, it's just, for me, once you take, because to be perfectly honest, ladies and gentlemen, like, when Tom and I get married, it's not going to be a religious ceremony.
No.
No, it's not. And to be, most, you know, if you take religion completely out of the equation.
Right.
Because this is what...
Out of the argument.
Out of the argument, because you basically, what gays and lesbians want, yeah, are just the federal and state and local recognitions of marriage, so therefore we can visit each other in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So we can have estate issues taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
So if you take out the religious component, suddenly the argument against same-sex marriage makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah, they have nothing to stand on except, we just don't like it.
Right.
We just don't want it.
Right.
That's the only thing that they have left.
Right.
It's icky, or it's just not as good, or it's going to make our whole relationship not as good or not,
right,
as important in our eyes because these people are lunatics.
Right.
I mean, it's the only other argument that they have. It just brings their bigotry to the forefront.
Right.
Which brings me to one other thing that I do want to quote from this. He says earlier on in the article, and trust me, we're going to go through this whole thing.
Right.
How dangerous is this politically? Please remember that for the mildest of comments critical of the political agenda of homosexual activists, I have been called a homophobe for years. This is a term that was invented to describe people with a pathological fear of homosexuals, the kind of people who engage in acts of violence against gays. But the term was immediately extended to apply to anyone who opposed the homosexual activist agenda in any way. This is the one section of his article that I actually agree with.
Mm-hmm.
In this term homophobe and homophobic, I think has been used to such an extent that it no longer really has any meaning. And
right.
Also, I've always had a weird, I don't know, just reaction to the term homophobic, like homophobia,
right,
as if there's something, something, you know, psychologically sad, I guess, about the person. I mean, like, if
right.
they're agoraphobic, okay, to put it into a phobia, like agoraphobic,
right,
you can't go outside, you have this panic attack.
Right.
You know, acrophobia, you have this crazy reaction to spiders. There's something...
It's arachnophobia.
Arachnophobia, what did I say?
I
don't know what the hell I said, but anyway.
Acrophobia, you say, that's a fear of heights.
Fear of heights. Well, that's what I've got. But anyway, it is this something, it is this idea that it is this something that, this thing that people can overcome through
right.
sort of, you know, through therapy or,
right.
or you know, I don't know, a whole battery of issues that they can, you know, that they can overcome, when really the term homophobe, I don't think it's that people are afraid of homosexuals or they have this, like, this panic attack,
right?
You know, and they freeze up,
like,
when they're around
homosexuals. Oh my God, it's a gay person! Oh my God!
No, folks who, you know, don't want homosexuals to be treated as human beings,
mm-hmm.
okay, and to have the same basic civic rights as everybody else,
right?
I agree. We need to retire the term homophobe.
Right.
We need to retire it. We need to expunge it from the English language. It needs to be...
Right.
It needs to be relegated to history. And from this point on, I agree. Anyone who is against homosexuals having the same basic inalienable rights, pursuit of happiness,
right.
that everyone else is entitled to in this country,
mm-hmm.
should be called out for what they are, and that is bigot.
Exactly.
They are bigots.
Totally, they're bigots.
Because they don't want us to have something that they have solely because of who and what we are.
Well, and also something that
that really should be, that really is ours, that they just want to take away. You know, fundamental, like,
right.
The language actually, so the there's the amendment on the ballot here in California that, it's called Proposition 8, that if the majority of the California residents vote on it, it will change the California Constitution to get rid of same-sex marriage. Now, Jerry Brown, who is our very liberal attorney mm-hmm. general and former governor of California, has went and changed the language so that on the ballot it actually says that voting for this would eliminate the right of same-sex couples to marry in California, which is exactly the case. Mm-hmm. Because the Supreme Court did its job and ruled that the other proposition was unconstitutional.
Right.
That is their job.
Yeah, that's so, checks and balances, which is, you know, in the Constitution. Which
yes.
This is, gosh, now I've even forgotten the class that you had to take in eighth
Civics.
Grade. Civics, thank you. 101, Mr. Card.
Yeah.
Checks and balances.
Right. So, right. And so basically, that right has now been established, saying that it is wrong. Saying that gays and lesbian same-sex couples do have the right to get married, and this amendment would eliminate that right. And now suddenly all the people who are trying to push Proposition 8 are like, got up in arms, so like, oh, well, that makes it come, that's very inflammatory, and that's very it puts it in a negative light.
Mm-hmm.
No, it does, because that's what you're asking.
Yes, because that's exactly what it is.
And now, and they have pushed to try to get a change, and they've
right.
given up because they realize they're not going to get any headway on it. So
let me tell you, let me ask Mr. Card this, sort of, you know, if he ever listens to this thing,
right,
sort of metaphorically, if this measure fails,
right,
will he then retract this notion, at least the portion of this article in which he says legalizing gay marriage in California is destroying democracy as we know it, when that very activity, okay, of voting against this
mm-hmm.
amendment, it's a democratic act. I mean,
yeah.
on a fundamental basis. It's the entire state saying yes or no. And if they say no, will he retract that statement? I mean, will he, you know...
Well,
you know,
right.
Will he... Well, obviously he'll be proven wrong. Pretty much every single line in this article is wrong, but that particular one will definitely be proven in that moment. Should, and hopefully shall... it be
right.
Shall it fail? Okay, so we need to wrap this first section up.
Yes.
There's going to be more, mark my words. But I want to end this before our famed random taglines.
Right.
With just one thing. So yeah. So as John said, we actually met Orson Scott Card in Chicago at this bookstore that's no longer there. Unfortunately, it was this great sci-fi and fantasy bookstore, and he signed my hardbound copy
of Xenocide,
which is the third book in the Enders trilogy, and this is what he signed to me. He said, "To Tom, did you wash your hands, Orson Scott Card?" Well, Mr. Card, I can honestly say right now, yes, indeed, I have washed my hands of you.
Exactly.
So let's wrap this up.
All right.
I'm going to roll. John's going to give the random Gamer Mafia tagline. Here we go.
13. Is a girdle of opposite sex a cursed item or just what you need?
All right. So ends our first emergency session of the Gamer Mafia podcast. Thank you so much for listening to our rant. There will be more. Stay tuned. Until next time, this is Tom, your host.
This is John, your co-host.
And you've been listening to the Gamer Mafia podcast.
Thank you, and good gaming.
Hey, if you'd like to contact us with some of your stories about being a gay geek, you can at info@gamermafia.com. GAYMERMAFIA.com.